south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, let's get some of these emails out of the way. By the way, about your emails, I get a lot of them, you know. I do read them all, but I can't answer them all, especially the ones that are very specific. If you get too specific, like you ask me, what towns or cities in a particular country have the best real estate prices, the most spectacular views, or the least corrupt cops? Well, if I can't give you a good answer, I sure can find out because I have lots and lots of context down here. But I'm not going to read those emails on the air either because they're way too specific. And naturally, I don't have time to reply to everyone's email. In fact, I'm looking at the emails that came in this year at my Gmail site. It's 11,000 and some change. Of course, that includes all the exiled Nigerian princes who need my bank account numbers to help move their funds. Yep, the Expat Files is number one with a bullet in Nigeria. Who'da thunk? Oh, and if you hear some noise in the background today, right next door, there's some jackhammering going down. I can't do anything about it. Now, as far as people sending me very detailed emails about their particular circumstance, that's why I have one-on-one Skype and phone consults. So if you're in a jam or confused and you need specific answers, just sign up for a half hour or hour personal consult with me. First step, I'll send you my consult questionnaire form. It's got lots of pertinent questions on it and, by the way, is a very good guide for anyone who's setting up a plan B. So even if you're not looking to have a personal call with me, I'll send you the questionnaire because it really does spell out all the things you need to be thinking about on your way to accomplishing your own plan B. Oh, and another thing, I've done hundreds of one-on-one phone consults, and I'd say in at least half the cases, people divulge a lot of very personal information. Sometimes it's absolutely necessary to move your plan along. Of course, people tell me what they want to tell me. However, a lot of times it's about assets, finances, banks, medical problems, divorces, problems with the IRS, debts, bankruptcies, problems with the law, etc. Lots of that stuff is highly personal and you don't want it to get out on the net. And if you use the traditional methods to talk, phone, Skype, Magic Jack, whatever, well, they're just not secure. In fact, anything that's connected with a phone company, Google, or Facebook is out there for everyone to see. No problem, though, because if you have some sensitive information to share, we'll use a very secure, encrypted service. So if you want the conversation to go down that way, and a lot of people do, I'll set you up with a little program you can install. From then on, when we talk, it's completely private and encrypted. All right, speaking of moving along on your plan B, we're getting close to the last call for my July 2019 Expat Insider Seminar. Now, as this show is first going out on June 15th, and the seminar kicks off on July 6th, we're about 3 weeks away, and there's still time to sign up for a week-long blast from the fire hose. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com. Click on Johnny's seminar link. All right, let's clean up a few emails now. This one comes from Hayek's Ghost. Hayek's Ghost. You libertarians out there know the famous philosopher slash economist Friedrich Hayek, right? And if you don't, well, you should, so look him up. Anyway, this email's from Hayek's Ghost. He says, Johnny, I'm interested in getting the solar lithium-ion batteries you were talking about, but just the batteries. Can you refer me to where I can find just the batteries? I'm wanting to start installing them in my rental units, and Tesla power walls, for my case, are just not cost-effective. All right, Mr. Ghost, just a few dribs and drabs of information here for listeners who don't know what the hell we're talking about now. You know, for the past maybe 4 or 5 months, I've been dishing out little segments on how to set up your own solar power system here in Latin America, and I mentioned the industry standard for home solar setups is Tesla. Yep, just like the Tesla car, they have a division called Tesla Powerwall. And it really is the Cadillac of solar systems, and the price reflects it. Actually, it's the Tesla of solar system. Who even says things like it's the Cadillac of whatever thing these days? Talk about old school, very old school. Think it's time to can that superlative, don't you? Anyway, as Mr. Ghost says, the Tesla units aren't cost-effective in his case. Well, you know, they're really not cost-effective for almost anyone living up in the States until you get that massive federal rebate. Because setting up a Powerwall system, if you can even get them, because I hear now they're lagging 6 to 8 months if you order one now. And besides that, who knows if Tesla's even going to be around? Looks like they're hanging on to the edge of bankruptcy. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, to set up a Tesla Powerwall, actually they're a Powerwall 2 now, they're on to the second generation. To install a system like that, and you have to have professionals install it, they won't let you do it yourself. That's another negative and a big additional expense. Anyway, to set up the so-called Cadillac of solar-powered home systems, it's going to cost you $15,000 to $20,000, way out of the price range for average people. Of course, Tesla and practically all the solar power installers throughout the world offer finance plans, but I think that's rather stupid. Like my mom always said, if you can't afford to pay cash for something other than a house, you've got no business buying it. Now, my dad wasn't of that mindset at all. He didn't give a shit. And that's what 99% of all the household battles were about. Money and my dad's poor handling of it. But I digress. Now, where were we before I so rudely interrupted my own rant? Oh yeah, Tesla Powerwalls and how expensive they are. Well, Mr. Hayek's ghost, you're asking me if I can refer you to a place you can find just the batteries. Well, here's my opinion on all that. You know, one of the reasons I started talking about putting together your own off-the-grid or even partially off-the-grid solar system in the first place, it's because now they're so much more dependable. They're all packaged in one unit, and they're virtually maintenance-free for years on end. It's a completely different story than it was just 2 or 3 years ago. You don't have to have 3, 4, 5, or 6 separate solar devices strapped to your wall. That means you don't have to mess around with a bunch of wires, clips, cables, and special connections and tools and a stack of batteries on the basement floor. More importantly, you don't have to constantly keep a watch on that stuff and monitor it like you did just a few years ago. And you know, when the Powerwall came out, I thought, man, this is so cool, but it is very expensive. Well, as predicted, didn't take long for the Chinese, who supply the lithium-ion batteries for Tesla, by the way, and most lithium-ion batteries used throughout the world for everything. Well, it didn't take the Chinese long to come up with their own Powerwall clones for more or less half the price with the same guarantees. That means there's just one box that's got everything in it, except, of course, the solar panels, which have to be outside somewhere. That means you've got a no-brainer, no-maintenance system that practically anyone could set up, even someone who can barely screw in a light bulb. You just locate the unit in your house, you have someone with a little know-how, maybe even a professional installer, mount the panels and run the wires to the unit, have an electrician come in for 2 hours to wire up the 110-60-cycle output coming out of the solar unit to your own circuit breaker box and install a cutoff switch, and basically, you're done. You're off the grid. You don't even have to read the manual. Who reads manuals these days anyway when you've got YouTube? So, Mr. Ghost, I can't recommend a place for you to get the batteries because I don't recommend piecing these solar power systems together part by part. Unless you're a veteran, do-it-yourselfer, and love tinkering with things. Sure, I could tell you to go to Alibaba, OLX.com, eBay, Craigslist, and check the surplus sites. They've all got listing after listing of lithium-ion batteries for sale. But unless you have some basic electrical skills yourself, it's a pig in a poke. Now, the thing is here what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make this transition for people to go off the grid as painless as possible. It's supposed to make your life less, not more complicated. One thing I know for sure, if you start piecing a system together, one part from this catalog, one part here from Craigslist, the system might work fine, but you'll be babysitting that thing forever. Oh, and by the way, Mr. Ghost, those portable solar systems I've been talking about, they come with a couple of suitcase panels you can just take with you anywhere and throw them out in the lawn. Those things are spectacular. They're a real breakthrough, too, and can save your life. There you've got portable suitcase solar panels and a very light and super powerful all-in-one unit. In fact, some of the very best ones I've seen lately, they put out around 1,000 to 2,000 watts, and they only weigh at the most 50 pounds. So you've got a unit with a battery that can hold 1,000 to 2,000 watts. What's that really mean? That'll run your refrigerator, computer, TV, a few lights and other small gadgets for 8 or 10 hours. Then the next day when the sun comes up, the panels will recharge the system and you've got another 10 hours. If you're really good at planning your energy usage, you could squeeze even more hours out of it. Normally what I'd recommend is two of those suitcase panel units, 200 watts each. That's a total of 400 watts of charge power when you've got them out in the sun. So during the day, you just throw them out in the lawn or wherever you are, And while the sun's shining on those panels, you can run some small appliances, computer, refrigerator, stuff like that, while you're still charging the unit. So your solar panels are supplying the power you'll need during the day while the sun's shining. And at the same time, it's recharging your batteries for use in the evening. I'll be going into a little bit more detail on the portable power unit in a couple of weeks, so stay tuned for that. Oh, and by the way, I just ordered another unit like that from China. It's on its way. I'll be checking it out shortly, and I think it's the one I'm going to recommend that everyone get. But we'll see. Stay tuned. Again, let me repeat. This is the portable unit I'm talking about, not the whole house unit, with the 15 panels and weighs 400 to 500 pounds and costs 8 to 10 grand. I'm talking about the emergency solar power station, one you should all have, even if you're living up in the States, especially if you're living up in the States. But note, it's not for powering up big items like air conditioning, your washing machine, or electric range. But it'll certainly get you through power outages just fine, whether they're prolonged or just a few minutes. Man, I'm telling you, if these things were available during Hurricane Katrina, it would have been a whole different ballgame. But they weren't. It's new, lighter, longer-lasting, and streamlined technology, and they're just coming online now. So you've got two suitcase solar panels. That means they look just like suitcases. When you flip the latch, they open up double size. They've got a little mounting stand and feet built right into them. And the little all-in-one solar unit, well, it's got a handle on it, and one person can carry it around easily. Anyway, just hold on a bit. In a future show, I'll be giving a lot more details on that. Again, just a strong reminder, even if you don't have any plans to go off the grid, you're going to rent or whatever, you really should buy one of these portable solar units. It's as valuable as having extra water around. You won't believe how convenient they are. And the batteries, which in any solar system are the weakest link, they're generally guaranteed for 3,000 charge cycles. That's easily 10 years. Plus, once again, zero maintenance. Speaking of solar, I've got this email from Scott. He says, "Thanks for all the great info, Johnny. Though I'd prefer the solar episodes you're doing as complete episodes instead of piecemeal. Knock them out in a few episodes, then get back to the healthcare and whatever else those geezers want to listen to." Hey, wait a minute, Scott. Are you calling my listeners geezers? I don't know, Scott. If I had to be stuck with one person on a desert island, I think I'd pick a geezer over a millennial. At least for survival skills, anyway. And make that a good-looking, hard-body, extra-fit female geezer, of course. Hey, why not, if given the choice, huh? Then he says, "My electric bill states that in 2018 we used 6,102 kilowatt-hours. Question is, Johnny, what size off-the-grid system might that translate into for me?" All right, Scott, me, Johnny here. You're right in the ballpark for that exact system I was talking about in a previous show. Now, I don't know what part of the state you're living in, but you'll get less sun days than you would if you were living in Latin America. But if you had that kind of power usage, let's say in Panama, Costa Rica, practically anywhere in Latin America except way, way south, Argentine way, all you'd need is around 5,000 watts of solar panels. That's about 15 330-watt panels. And you'll find 330-watt panels everywhere. They're very cheap these days, probably around $150 a panel or less. And you get yourself a 10 to 13 kilowatt all-inclusive unit, like I mentioned in a previous show. And you're set. You're off the grid, man. Total cost? Probably around 8 to 10 grand. Of course, up in the States, you'll probably get a $3,000 rebate, too. But we're talking about Latin America. No one down here is offering a rebate like that, but who cares? Getting off the grid and out from the tentacles of the power company is its own reward. And Scott, these are ballpark figures. Yep, ballpark figures. That brings to mind a lost in translation story that happened just about 2 weeks ago. I was in an Uber, and as soon as I got in, the Uber driver switched the radio station to a gringo classic rock station. Like my life won't be complete unless I hear the Bee Gees or Lionel Richie just one more time. Gag me with a, you know. Anyway, I was asking him about what it would cost to take a day cruise to a popular nearby island. He said about $75 in the stadium. And I said, "In the stadium?" He said, "Yeah, $75 in the stadium, el estadio." He was speaking Spanish, of course. I was confused. That island's way too small to have a stadium. Then it finally dawned on me. He was trying to tell me it was a ballpark figure around $75. However, if you say it in Spanish, it comes out a stadium figure. Not a ballpark figure, but a ballpark is a stadium. Duh. Nope, I didn't try to correct him. No point in big explanations. Better to quit while you're ahead. Just goes to show you, no matter how long you've been in Latin America, things are lost in translation every day. All right, there's a little more to Scott's email. Let me read it to you. He's referring now to the fact that when someone asked me, what do I listen to, what podcast, I told him, I listen to Richard Martin's Wake Up Call, Gary Null's stuff, some others, but I mostly do a lot of reading. Though I mentioned I listen to Caravan to Midnight, too, but not all the episodes. And our emailer, Scott's got a few things to say about that. He says, Johnny, as for Caravan to Midnight, I'm surprised you dole out $60 a year to listen to it. He has some great guests, but I'm not so sure about the host. He says the Corbett Report and the Peace Revolution podcast are by far more informative. Now, Scott, I listened to the Corbett Report. Just forgot to mention it. Listen to some Joe Rogan episodes, too. All depends. You know, there's only so much time in the day. And about Caravan to Midnight, well, I used to like that show a lot. He has some terrific guests. Or I should say about every other guest, because since the host, John B. Wells, had an apocalyptic moment, crashed his Harley and said Jesus plucked him from the wreckage. Well, since then, it seems every other show has a very religiously motivated guest. Nothing wrong with that, but it seems even very interesting and educated people talking very seriously about a subject, they'll always seem to toss off a Bible quote or two into the mix. Problem is, most of the time they're cherry-picking and they've never really read the whole Bible. That's why a long, long time ago I quit listening to Rush Limbaugh, Alex Jones, and most of the other conservative media blabbermouths. Though people call me a blabbermouth too, so maybe I'm calling the kettle black. Who knows? Now, since so many of these blabbermouth talk show hosts and their guests throw in their favorite cherry-picked Bible verses, I just for once here would like to throw in a few of my favorites. For example, Leviticus chapter 19, verse 28. Ye shall not make any cuttings in your flesh, nor print any marks upon you. Now, technically, that should put every tattoo artist out of business, right? I know I'm digressing here, but just saying. Which begs the question, why are narcos and gangsters so vicious, yet so devout? They've all got religious icons, medallions, rosaries, tats of Jesus, Mary, and the saints. And, you know, Bible verses are huge in tattoo land for gangsters and normal people alike. But did you ever notice they only print the nice Bible verses? Why is it, for example, I never see one of my other favorite verses tattooed on a person? This is Leviticus chapter 11, verses 20 through 22. It says, and you can look it up, all flying insects that walk on all fours are to be regarded as unclean. However, there are some you may eat, those that have jointed legs for hopping on the ground. Of those you may eat any kind of locust, katydid, cricket, or grasshopper, but all other flying insects that have four legs you are to regard as unclean. Wow, pure poetry, huh? Now, why haven't I ever seen that tattooed on somebody's neck? Well, maybe it's too many words in the canvas, too small. Though it's odd, too, I've never heard a single priest or pastor utter those words on the Sunday pulpit in church. Unless I missed it, but I don't think so. I went to Catholic school, and every morning we had to go to Mass and hear a nice, long sermon. And after 12 years of sitting through that, you think I'd have heard every verse in the Bible. But nope, the priest and padres are cherry pickers, too. But as for the mindset and morality of narcos, I don't get that either. They all love their mothers and have little altars with candles, statues, open Bibles, and a place to kneel, as do most all Latino homes. I don't get it, nor do I get the fact that many Latinos, when buying a new car, will have the priest bless it. Hey, I've actually witnessed that. Though if you've ever driven down here, you'd know that asking for good luck on the road from anyone, under any circumstances, is not a bad idea. All right, continuing on with pertinent emails, we've got one here from Mr. A., a lawyer from the late great city of Atlanta. He said, Johnny, I'm curious about something. You seem obsessed with the cost of utilities in Latin America. What's up with that? Power and gas and such represent such a minuscule portion of one's life expenses so as to be virtually irrelevant. Not sure if it's just my American white male attorney privilege, but I've never once nor would I ever contemplate even one second the cost of utilities in terms of where I might be moving or living. Those costs would have to exceed the world average by 100 times or more to be relevant in the analysis for me. $50 versus $150 versus $500 a month for utilities, pretty much all the same in the grand scheme of things, I think. Johnny, you mentioned Costa Rica having high natural gas and power costs. High as in how much? More than $500 a month for a small household? Surely not. Probably not even $200. So why is that even worth mentioning? Is it maybe your average listener or seminar attendee really is strapped for cash? What would you say is the median net worth of your seminar attendees? $100,000 or less, or in the high six-figure, low seven-figure range? Presumably the former, if they're worried about the cost of electricity. Signed, Mr. A, attorney at large. You know, if you were to translate that into Spanish, it would be large attorney. Nope, I'm not fat shaming again. It's just a quirk of the way they transpose the noun and adjective in the Spanish language. Actually, our counselor, Mr. A, is a very trim and fit feller. He's got an icon here, and I can see what he looks like. By the way, you heard Mr. A say something about his white male privilege? Well, the other day I was talking to expat Eddie, and he was saying that women may bitch about white male privilege, but they've got a supreme female privilege that trumps everything. It's called multiple orgasms. By the way, speaking of lost in translation and transposing nouns and adjectives, well, I predict, and you heard it here first, there's going to be big trouble brewing shortly when lag time kicks in and the social justice warriors start appearing here in Latin America. You don't see them yet, but they're coming. I predict it's going to be a really big deal in one particular area, the language itself. Now, the Spanish and French languages in particular don't conform at all to the SJW vision of the world. Why? Because both the French and Spanish languages are sexist. Why is that? Can you guess? That's because a huge percentage of nouns are designated feminine, words that end in A, and masculine, words that end in O. That's against everything the social justice warriors are pissing on about. Yes, I predict when the SJWs finally arrive down here, they'll try to force the language moderators to make the proper corrections. That would be to gender neutralize the vocabulary, probably even issue an institutional apology. Then you've got real problem words like the word casa, which means house. It ends in A, meaning it's feminine. So think about it. Uh-oh, the casa, the home, the hearth, ends in an A, a female designation. That would be, according to SJWs, not only sexist, but classist, designating the house as a woman's domain. But there are also ironies throughout. Take, for example, the word tequila or cerveza, beer. Those are feminine. The end in A. How'd that happen? Anyway, I predict sooner or later, the SJW agenda as it lands in Latin America will launch a full-scale attack on the genderizing of words. Being that the Spanish, French, even Portuguese cultures are way out of step with the LGBTQ society and SJW culture. The question is, will it succeed? No way. This is Latin America, you know. The question is, how can all you intelligent people up in the States put up with all that crap? Do you really need another reason to get the hell out of Dodge? Oh, and you might wonder, have social justice warriors landed in Latin America already? Well, I can tell you right now, there's always going to be some at the college campuses. We're all allowed to be somewhat idealistic, moronic idiots at that age. I stand guilty myself. But as for real SJWs with power trying to infiltrate and elbow their way into Latin society, insert laugh track here. All right, before I so rudely interrupted myself, where were we? Oh, yeah. Counselor Mr. A asks in his email, why do I seem so anally obsessed with the cost of utilities? It's not even worth mentioning, according to him. Well, counselor, I'd say about 10 to 20% of the people that come to my seminars are very well off. They could live anywhere, even build their own compound up in the States, go completely off the grid with their own private security force. But they still know, and they tell me this all the time, money won't help. When the poop hits the ventilator up in the States, all bets are off, and that's why they want to have a nice, safe plan B where they can watch the first world implode from a non-strategic site far, far away. So you've got that 10 or 20%. Their intentions for having a plan B are somewhat different than the bottom 10 or 20%. Basically, backpacking, tree-hugging, geography teacher types. Most of them had backpacked through Latin America a long time ago when they were college kids, often as Peace Corps volunteers or with do-gooder church groups. And now that they're close to retirement after they've gotten their years in as a geography, art, or science teacher, or even government worker, they just know by firsthand boots-on-the-ground experience that Latin America is the place they want to retire. They've been down before. They really like the climate, the culture, and the people. As for the others that come down to the seminar, the majority, about half of those have their own small businesses. They've got assets and are really good savers. They've got rental units, pension plans, 401ks, etc., but they're old enough to know how the United States used to be, and they don't like where it's going. They know nothing can fix it. It's not going to get better, only worse. They want to get off the treadmill, get healthy, and lower their stress. That's why they're formulating a plan B. Then we've got the other half of that in-between group who are on a fairly limited pension, budget, or Social Security, and they know they'll never be able to live a first-world style of life when they finally get to retirement age. So there's a lot of people coming to the seminars and listening to the show who are just about ready for their Social Security or pension to kick in, and they want out, knowing it's just not going to be enough. So, counselor, if you think I'm too anal or obsessed with the cost of utilities, because I bring it up quite a bit, it's a very popular item. And it's true, as you pointed out, whether it's $50 versus $150 or $500 a month for utilities, that won't make a difference to someone who's living on $5,000 a month. But remember, the average Social Security check's only around $1,200 to $1,500 a month. So even if the utility bills were $200 to $300 a month, that's a pretty good chunk. Now, you mentioned that I mentioned Costa Rica's gas and power costs are rather high. Just figure they're about three times as high as yours are in Atlanta. Now, I know, for example, during the 4 months of summertime in Chicago, it can get pretty hot. In fact, my mother has a small house north of Chicago, built in 1960. It's only around 1,400 square feet. She lives alone except when my brothers and sisters are in the marital doghouse. She tells me her electric bill in the summer is around $250 a month. Then the winter kicks in and it drops down to around $80. But then her gas bill kicks up because she's got gas central heating. So she's got this little house and her utility bills are around $300 a month on average. Let's contrast that with Latin America. I don't think I've ever met a gringo expat yet who's been living down here, same kind of situation, small house, air conditioning or not, who pays more than $100 a month for all utilities combined. So, counselor, yes, most of the people who listen to this show and who go to the seminars are concerned about the cost of living at home and here in Latin America. And that's why we keep hitting on it. And when the request for that kind of info drops off and people want me to concentrate on other topics, no problem. We can switch gears in a my jammy segundo. And counselor, about the net worth of the people that come to the seminar, I'd say it's probably in the high six or low seven figures. That's because a couple of really high rollers generally skew the curve. Though I'd say a much more important number than the net worth is how much debt you're in. I'll tell you what, I know lots of gringos and even more Latinos who look like they're doing awful damn well, though they don't sleep too well at night. Yep, perpetual debt has a way of gnawing at you, doesn't it? You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!